This week on the BOAG World Show, we explore the importance of blogging in building your reputation and visibility. This week's show is sponsored by Gather Content and Videoblocks. The BOAG World Show, the podcast about all aspects of digital design, development and strategy. My name is Paul BOAG and joining me on this week's show is Marcus Lillington. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, Paul.
Sorry, we instantly
talk all over each other. I was debating with myself, should I be honest and say this is the second one we've done today?
I know, yeah. Well, you've said it now, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I know, but I said it very quietly.
Does that not count if you say it quietly?
Yeah, because some people won't hear you.
Well, people don't pay any attention to this podcast anyway, so I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Well, I thought we had over a million listeners now.
Oh, a gazillion. Yeah, we have a gazillion, but none of them actually pay any attention to it. They just have it going in the background while they're cooking tea or whatever,
yeah.
Or doing work.
Driving their car, that
yeah.
sort of thing.
Yeah. So, if you're driving a car right now, please don't pay full attention to us. Pay attention
to
the road.
Yes.
Yeah. We don't want your full attention.
Talking about cars, though, and I know we kind of vaguely were there. I watched on the Tesla website, the new technology they've got for self-driving. And it blew my mind.
Why was it so cool?
Because there's like a, they've obviously set in, I want to go from here to there, which is, I don't know, 30 miles away. And the car just drives, the guy sat there in the front seat and he's got his legs crossed away from the pedals and his arms folded. And the car just takes him from A to B completely, you know, and stop it. It can see pedestrians and it slows down for them. It deals with crossroads and all of this kind of stuff. And the fact that it can do that completely reliably, I found amazing.
But that's what self-driving cars do.
Yeah, but I thought they weren't like a real thing. I thought they were a thing that was on the kind of test track and still drove into people.
No, we've moved a long way past that. No, we're living in the future.
Yeah, well, that's basically was it. Oh, and on the same subject, have you seen Blade Runner yet?
Of living in
the future?
Wow. No. Is it good?
Shall I ruin it for you?
Yeah. Was Decker a replicant after all? Don't answer that. Otherwise, everybody who listens to this show will hate you forever. Did they answer that question? Do they?
They don't specifically deal with that, but there is an assumption.
That's
an interesting point, because I never really thought that he was or he wasn't. That was never a thing for me. He was always a human to me.
It was a huge thing, because I went to art college and we did entire lectures on Blade Runner.
Yeah, it's my favourite film of all time.
Yeah,
I regularly watched it. But
now that's interesting. Then, if it was your favourite film of all time, did the sequel leave you disappointed or satisfied?
The latter.
Oh,
it's done in the same. It's a homage to the original in all the good ways. It's kind of
right.
The music is kind of like a 2017 version of Vangelis' soundtrack, which obviously was a classic
great.
At the time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really slow, which
good.
I love. That's how it's meant to be. It's meant to take forever for them to kind of, you know, for our new Blade Runner to kind of slowly pick his way through this kind of minefield of stuff. And every single scene in it looks amazing. If I have one small complaint, and it's only a small complaint, is that I found the dialogue a little bit lacking, a little bit characterless. Where you think about how the character of Roy in the last film, I mean, he was, you know, amazing, especially the last scene. The amount of character he had as a person, even though he was a replicant, that you don't get that so much from the characters in this film, but they look stunning. It is brilliant. You will love it.
Oh, I can't wait. Oh, I don't know when I'm going to find time to do that. Oh, my life is so hectic.
It's two hours and 43 minutes of your life it will take. And I want to watch it again immediately.
Cool. And it's really one you've got to see at the cinema, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It's that gorgeous.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, must.
Another thing I'm excited about living in the future is soon my face will open doors for me. Well, it'll open my iPhone. I'm so excited about the new iPhone. I haven't talked about it on the show, and I need to. Phone, iPhone, iPhone X, yay.
Yeah, there you go. I'm going to get one, but I'm not that excited about it.
Oh, you're so boring.
But really? Well, what? I'm due a new one, all right? The one thing I'm really excited about on it is the camera. I've still got a 6S or something like that. It's two years old, and it's like time for a new phone. And it's like, oh, I can get a non-massive tablet-sized phone with a really, really cool camera in it. So that I'm excited about. What else? Tell me, Paul.
Well, talking about living in the future, you unlock it with your face.
That
feels like you're in sci-fi, right?
Yeah, I agree, but I wonder whether it'll work because...
Yeah, I know. I've got that worry as well.
Because my thumb sort of works randomly on my phone.
I've never had a problem with that.
Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. So it's kind of like... it's more actually between my iPad rarely works with my thumbprint, whereas my phone usually does.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you see, now you might find your face is better then.
Yes, my craggy old face will be great.
Yeah, you might find you've got such a characterful face that it always works flawlessly.
Nobody
looks like you. I've got doppelgangers all over the place. People often think they've seen me on a train, and it's not really me. So, anybody will be able to unlock my phone. So I've got such a boring, nondescript face. Wireless charging, what about that?
I have to get the wireless chargey thing.
Yeah, but you don't need to get the Apple one. You can get a cheapo one that's like $19 or something.
Yeah.
So I don't know. To be honest, I agree with you.
It's not a bad thing, but...
The thing that I'm most excited about is the same as you. I'm excited about the camera because I've got an iPhone 6. S the same as you.
Same, yeah.
And the camera's a bit old now, isn't it? A bit shitty.
I know, and I've seen all the pictures that Dan and Ed have been taking on their 7 big, the 7 pluses that have got the same camera. I don't think it's quite as good as the new one on the X, but it's got the double camera in it. And they're amazing. Yeah. Absolutely amazing.
But we'll have that weird lighting mode thing you can do as well. So that's going to be very cool.
Yes. So I'm sort of, now talking about it, I'm quite excited. Sorry, I was blabbling on about iPhone X. I'm in a funny mood today, Paul.
Are you?
Yeah, I don't know why.
I don't know. I don't know where to go with that. I just don't. Whatever. Anyway, this show, we're talking about blogging.
Yes.
Yay! My favourite thing. Well, it's not my favourite thing. I have many things. It's what I seem to spend most of my life doing is blogging. Mm-hmm. And so we thought we'd spend a bit of time. We're talking about content marketing, and we talked about podcasting in the last show. We're going to talk about SEO in the next show. We've got all these different areas of content marketing to talk about, but we have to do blogging, don't we? Because blogging is the kind of mainstay of your content marketing strategy. You do know, Marcus, I'm doing this entire season just so that you might get your ass into gear and do some better marketing for Headscape. You do know that is the hidden agenda, right?
It's the only thing, the only reason we're doing this is to make me do more. Because I was thinking, blogging, that's something I do occasionally. That's not right, is it? You're not meant to do it occasionally.
No.
But yes, I would like to do more. Paul, make me do more.
Well, the thing
like
is...
I quite writing. I'm in this my funny mood. I keep wanting to... I'll say something, pause, and then annoyingly start again 5 seconds later. I quite like writing, so it's something that I think I can be persuaded to do more of. It's always the... I like writing about something I like writing about, and it's finding that thing is my main issue always. I'll shut up now.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we've got Vitaly coming on the show. It's a pre-recorded interview that you haven't listened to. So this is going to be... You're not going to learn anything at this point. Well, no, you will learn a few things because I've got a bit of before and after of the interview stuff that I want to share. But yeah, you need to listen to the interview with Vitaly Friedman, the founder of Smashing, who we have on later, because he talks about some really interesting stuff that about his method of blogging and the approach that he uses, which is very different to my own. And he talks a little bit well about what they look for in writers as well. So if you want to do guest posts and you want to get accepted by people like Smashing Magazine, he shares a little bit about that, which is really cool as well.
Sorry.
Yeah, oh God, it's so painful. It really is.
No, but it's relevant to what you just said.
Okay.
How did you get in with Smashing Magazine? Did you just sort of like go send them an email, phone them up, meet them at conference? What happened?
I slept with Vitaly.
Really? Yes, it was the casting couch thing.
Yeah, it was. He's very predatory.
No, seriously, because that was a long time ago, wasn't it?
Yeah,
you can't remember, can you?
No, I can't. I have no recollection whatsoever. You know, I have trouble remembering last week. I suspect probably he asked me to write, would be the logical, or speak at one of their events.
Yeah.
I've just become really good friends. We're just really rude to one another. It's like the same relationship I've got with you. We're just really, really rude to one another. That's how I become friends with anyone, is just insult them. And if they're still there after I've insulted them, then often it works out.
Yeah, it's best when they insult you back.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
absolutely
a mutual hatred thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Tolerating one another. So I wanted to make some reading suggestions each week as we talk about subject. I want to kind of share with you a few things that you can go out and find out more about that subject, get a better understanding of it, etc., etc. I want to share with you three posts this time, two of which are from me, and one is a whole nother website that you need to check out. We'll do my ones first, because if I do mine following the other one, they're going to seem very inadequate. So, you know, always do the shittier ones first. So there's a couple of ones that I've written. One is The Secret of Successful Company Blogging. Now, all of these will go in the show notes associated with the show, so you can check them out. But I will read the ridiculously long URL. Oh, this one's not too bad. boagworld.com/content-strategy/successful-company-blogging. All right. So this is an article I wrote about how, really, again, I wrote it so that Marcus might pay some attention and maybe, you know, actually do some blogging for Headscape. I don't think he's even read it.
I've read this one. I've read the next one, and I refer to it, occasionally when I'm occasionally writing a post. But yeah, so it's good stuff.
Yeah, this one was really about... talks about why blogging is worth doing for your business. It talks about why corporate blogs, your company blogs, often fail, and also a little bit about how to keep feeding the animal, as I refer to it, because that's the hardest bit about blogging, is to keep blogging.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings me on to the second post, which expands on that a little bit, which is how to ensure long-term blogging success. So that is available at blogging.com/marketing/blogging-success. And this one is kind of really breaks down the process of starting blogging and overcoming some of the fears that we have about it, like the fear of criticism. But it also goes further and looks at my process for blogging and how I go about blogging, which we touch on a little bit in the interview with Vitaly, but it's all laid out there in that post as well. But where you should really check out, if you want to get serious about blogging, whether you want to blog for your business or whether you want to blog to raise your personal profile or whatever your reason is, the place that you should go and you should definitely subscribe to is problogger.com. This is an absolutely superb resource. that I highly recommend, that has been around for a good while, and it's got like thousands of articles on every aspect of blogging, from how to start a blog, how to create your content, how to find readers, build your community, how to be more productive and efficient in the way that you work, how to deal with the technology associated with blogging, and then also things like how to get work through blogging or how to make money directly from blogging. So it really is a beautifully set up and run website by a guy called Darren Rose. And it's problogger.com. So make sure you check that one out. Really good site. Highly recommend it if you want to get into blogging. So there we go.
Cool.
Marcus, you need to subscribe to that site and do everything he says.
Okay, Paul.
You're not going to do that, are you?
I'm doing it now as we speak.
Look, oh, okay.
They've got me typing.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah. I totally believe that. That's really believable. All right, next, let's talk about our sponsor. Talking about blogging, one of the big things in producing any blog is having some quality content in the blog post that is not textual. And Marcus, again, is particularly bad at this. I tell you who's worse. Chris Scott writes these really long posts, and there's nothing wrong with long posts, right? That's fine. But no imagery, no video, no, not even audio in it. You know, there's absolutely nothing, and it's just this ream of text, and he's very naughty. And the content is naughty, Chris. It's very good content. What he writes is absolutely excellent, but he's not making it very scannable. He's not making it very engaging. And that's where something like VideoBlocks comes in. So VideoBlocks is part of a kind of network of sites called StoryBlocks. And they consist of imagery, stock imagery, stock video, and stock audio. So VideoBlocks, unsurprisingly, is the stock video part of it. But it's got all the things. Anything to make a blog post interesting is, you know, available to you. There's great imagery that you can get hold of. You can have video, little clips that you can include in and you can talk over the top of. And then obviously there's audio that you can use as background music to the little video clips you can create. And really, creating simple little videos is not difficult these days. It really is very, very straightforward, and so we've really got no excuse not to do it. So you've got sound effects, you've got everything you can need. Now the way that it works is you just subscribe to this. Okay, now I like this from a blogging perspective, right? Because yeah, sure, you could just download the individual little clips you want, right, as you were writing, you know, as a blog post came along. But A, that's going to be a lot more expensive, because it's much cheaper to pay a subscription model than it is to buy the individual things. But B, if you've signed up for a subscription that is taken out of your bank every month, then that's going to motivate you to blog in order to make get value out of your subscription. Make sense?
Yes.
It's like signing up for the gym. You know, if
only
pay.
Work.
No, it doesn't actually. That just completely undermined my entire argument, didn't it?
I've done that twice in my life. I've signed up for the gym and gone twice.
Okay. All right, dump that argument. But it's a subscription model, all right? That's the way they work.
I like the one you did last week, which was you can sign up. If you sign up for 1 month, download their entire catalogue and then dump it.
See, look, at some point I'll do a professional version of this sponsor slot. So once you've signed up, you can go in and there's like 115,000 or something videos that you can download as much as you want to in their members library. Obviously, it's all HD footage, but there's also things like After Effects templates, motion graphics, all that kind of stuff as well. And they've got a marketplace where you'll get heavily discounted other clips that aren't in the kind of members library, but you can buy millions and millions of them that will be much more expensive on other sites. You get them cheaper because you're part of the subscription model. All the content is royalty free. You can use it for commercial uses, personal uses, whatever you want. And new clips are added all the time. So you can give it a try. You get a 7-day free trial of it. And no, you can't log in for 7 days. Just download their entire library. they worked that one out. Impressive, eh? So they stop you doing that. But you can get in the library, you can see a load of stuff, you can download some samples, have a little play by going to videoblocks.com/BoagWorld. All right, so that is that. So now what we've got is we've got our interview with Vitaly, and we'll jump straight into that because it's a long interview and we're going to run over. So joining us today is Vitaly Friedman. Hello, Vitaly. How are you?
Hello, Paul. Doing wonderful. How are you today?
This is weird, isn't it? Because we were literally just talking 2 minutes ago.
This is how life is, I guess.
Well, it's your fault for having me on your supervisory board or whatever.
Well, it's your fault for accepting the, me inviting you. You didn't have to do that, but, apparently you did. So it's on you now.
How can you possibly turn down an opportunity to work with the internet famous Smashing Magazine?
No comment.
So how long has Smashing been going now?
So Smashing has been around for quite some time. It's been like, to be honest, I feel so old now. That's unbelievable.
It's you feel old. Do you imagine how I feel?
Oh, well, I don't care about your feelings. So, but yeah, it's been like 11 and a half years now. So even more than that, maybe. Wow. I think it's 12. Oh, I don't know. It's difficult to count. It's been just an incredible journey for me, to be honest.
So how did
sometimes I feel like a bit strange because I've been doing this for like 11 years.
Yeah.
But to find a profession like in the web, in digital, where you've been doing the same thing more or less.
Yeah.
Differentiated, but for 11 years.
I know. That's very unusual in our world, isn't it? So how did you get involved with... Was Smashing Magazine... how did it start? Was it a personal blog at the beginning, or was it always meant to be this kind of bigger magazine? What was the plan?
There was no master plan. You know me at this point. There is never a master plan. It's been very important for me to, like, throughout all these years, to be able to stand behind something, I guess. This mm-hmm. Has been my journey for the last decade. I really want to produce something that I'm proud of. Mm. And so when we started, it was more about basically me thinking about myself, I guess.
Yeah.
And, at some point in our life, we all have these moments. And so I just wanted, because I was freelancing at the time, like doing web stuff, mostly PHP mm-hmm. at the time. I just felt like it would be really useful to have some sort of a list, a reference that would contain all the links to all the techniques and tools and services and resources that I could actually benefit from when developing or designing. So I was doing PHP, CSS stuff, and so there was basically this attempt to create a resource which didn't exist at the time to sum it all up. So I would not have to spend too much time trying to find them every single time, more or less.
So, I mean, jumping forward to today, I mean, it's a very different beast today. And obviously, you're pushing out and creating content on a regular basis. There are posts that go out every day of the week. Well, the working week anyway. Right. And so that's a lot of different people that have to produce content for you. Now, this season of the podcast that we're currently on is about content marketing and reputation building and those kinds of things. Now, a big part of that is getting your name and your content out there. So it's writing for not just your own blog, but writing for other people. The problem is, of course, is persuading other people to let you write for them. So I'm kind of quite interested because you must have, thousands of people banging down your door going, let me write for Smashing. So how do you decide? What do you look for in a writer?
Oh, that's a very good point. So, very often I will have this conversation with other publishers or with my colleagues and friends, and they would try to find, A-name people, like people with huge names who want to write, but they never have time for writing.
Yeah.
So this was something I always given up already at this point. Instead, what I'm trying to find is people who have a story to tell. Mm-hmm. And that can be any story to tell. It could be, anything related to marketing. Could be, building backend. It could be design. Could be CSS techniques they discovered. So I'm looking specifically for people who are working or have been working on a complicated project, because usually complicated projects tend to have a wealth of techniques you have to find, you have to discover. It's not just, setting up a little site and have it done. performance challenges, design challenges, usability challenges, marketing challenges. So I'm looking specifically for those, mm-hmm. and then I'm trying to find people around those areas, and I try to contact them directly. And it's really rare, to be honest, that that we accept guest posts.
Okay, so somebody contacting you.
Yeah, that happens all the time. And most of the time, I was telling you that the quality is not as good as it is. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that we are, you know, closed down to curating or just inviting people that we like or so.
Yeah.
It means that if we have, if you want to write, one good clue for us is, for example, if you've been working on a project, yeah. or you've been running an open source project, or you've been having a side project, like, I don't know, 22 illustrations of cats a day,
yeah.
this kind of thing, right? So that brings attention. And so instead of the... just send a tweet linking to yeah. your work, not linking to, hey, I would like to write, but linking to a project you were working on.
So what you're saying is those emails that even I get all of the time, which say, hey, I've written this post on the 22 best ways to do blah, blah, blah.
Right, right.
That isn't the way to do it. It's rather to reach out to you and show the quality of your content and the kind exactly. of stuff you've been working
so
on.
So even if it's just a simple tweet, right, mention, which links to something interesting, because we monitor all of them, right?
Yeah.
And that would be enough sometimes. In the same way, like I... you know, we have a radio button saying press releases.
Yeah.
When someone tries to contact us.
Yeah.
Do you know what happens when you click that button?
Oh, really? That's a genius idea. It goes nowhere.
Yes, it goes nowhere. Actually, it's even worse because it's reported as spam.
You genius.
Yeah, well,
I love
that's mean,
it.
But I don't believe in press releases.
No, neither do I. I
if you get them out, it has to be like, if you want to reach out to us, I think at a more personal way, just again, a random tweet, more or less,
yeah.
would work like magic.
Okay, so you've seen a lot of blog posts go through Smashing Magazine over the years. And the one thing that I think anybody who is going to start doing some more blogging and get into the area of blogging wants to know is what posts do get read and do get shared. You know, what are the successful posts and what doesn't work, if that makes sense?
Okay. So that, of course, also requires, like, it's not a simple answer to no. a question to answer. I think that, if I'm being very honest, all those link baiting things,
yeah.
they work.
Yeah.
So, like, look, like, you know, 55 cats just were dropped in a swimming pool. Let's see what happened, this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That will definitely work. But again, I'm always thinking not about, like, a short-term page views, mm-hmm. or short-term conversion, if you like. I mean, pop-ups work as well. Like, annoying light boxes work as well.
Mm-hmm.
But they're damaging, extremely damaging for long-term reputation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of trying to play a long game here.
Yeah.
So we don't really accept those link-baiting articles.
Mm-hmm.
We accept articles that actually have potential, I would say, to stay relevant within years.
Ah,
so that means, again, things like, you know, this is a project that we worked on and this is what we did and this is why.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why it worked and this is why it didn't work. And at the same time, one other side of the coin is that articles that are reference articles, they work. So if you write an ultimate guide to CSS grid layout, that's probably going to bring you some traffic.
Yeah.
It will probably going to take you some time to write, right? But it will gain some traffic. And you can play with this stuff, like you can play with usefulness, relevance of an article, you can play with curiosity. This is why we have this kind of mystery riddles every now and again, where we invite readers on a journey to find something, and then they're going to get a prize if they do that,
mm-hmm.
right? And they get a lot of attention because they're not simple, they're kind of quite advanced.
Mm-hmm.
And also things that are stories, right? So once we... And it's not necessarily like lessons learned, but just a story of somebody doing something. And I'm not talking like a, you know, fiction at this point, but maybe your personal growth,
mm-hmm.
this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So your articles, for example, about pricing and billing, how you do this and what you learned along the way, not necessarily in a project, but in your experience,
mm-hmm.
that also works very well.
I think the other thing that works quite well about those kinds of posts is if they are honest. right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
What always the posts that most resonate with people from my experience of work, writing for Smashing are the ones where I say, look, I know this is the way you're supposed to do it, but this is the reality of what I really do. And people right. feel empowered by that because they realize the crap kind of compromises they're making are compromises that everybody is making. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so this it also creates an emotional connection, right? Mm. So I remember vividly, like maybe 10 years ago, everybody was creating a little portfolio website, and they would say things like, we are a company yeah. that does whatever. And it was like one person sitting in their swimsuit or so at home doing stuff. So being more grandiose than you really are.
Yeah.
I think at this point, the only way to establish connection with humans who are attending our sites, who are visiting our sites, is to be personal and show who you are, really are, even if it means quirky. And that means for me personally that you should not go like, you should have an opinion, even if it's a wrong one.
Mm.
It's better to have an opinion than not to have one at all.
Mm.
That means, for example, if you... Like a basic example is our cats, right? So I'm not really a cat person. And we had to, when we started doing the redesign, working on it, it was a kind of a decision. So what do? Do we have this playfulness around the site? Or should we be respected, serious, official publication that everybody trusts? And so it was like a very difficult decision for me as well. And I said, well, you know what? I would love it to the Smashing Magazine to be seen as being, open-minded and friendly and experimental in a way. I don't want it to be sturdy and boring, right? So we went to this route, totally going over the board, I think. Like one people would say, don't break the rules. And I think we should be breaking the rules because we can recover from them later.
Yeah.
So with cats, instead of saying, okay, let's have one cat somewhere in the footer, said, no, let's go overboard. We need to have cats.
There are cats so everywhere.
If we're cats, then cats. So at this point, we have 58 freaking cats on the site. If your listeners actually find all of them, I guarantee a business class ticket to any kind of conference of your choice, fancy hotel, speaker dinner, whatever you need, you will not find them.
There's a challenge for you. But in some ways, I think there's a kind of underlying point there, which is... I don't think you had any choice but to go down the route that you did, or I think it would have been a big mistake to go down another route, because that kind of fun, relaxed, friendly persona is you. That is who you are. For you to pretend to be a grown-up professional...
Somebody else.
It's
but I am
work.
Grown up, yeah, and I am professional.
Well, all right. I'm not grown up or professional, so I don't see why you should be. But I'm getting at by that? You're not a serious corporate type. Neither am I. It wouldn't have been right. And it would have seemed false and seemed awkward. And I see that in a lot of people who get into blogging and try to blog. They end up trying to be something they think they should be rather than what they actually are, which goes back to your comment about, the website as well. And in terms of the opinion stuff, I mean, the trouble with an opinion... And this isn't a question I sent you earlier, but I'm going to ask anyway. The trouble with having an opinion is that some people are going to disagree with it. And the internet is a place where they strongly disagree with it.
Well, and, that's how it is in the internet.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know that I have written posts for you sometimes where the reaction has been very strong to what I have said. How do you cope with that? How do you... Because... Obviously, you want to be a respected publication. You want people to like you, etc. But they don't always. So how do you balance that conflict with having an opinion with wanting to be liked?
Right. I think it's a very, very good question. I think that not the magazine should have an opinion, but authors should have an opinion.
Mm. So you're blaming me, kind of basically.
Well, not necessarily. So I will always protect you because I strongly believe that you have a point. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm not necessarily have to agree with everything you say, right, in order for you to be published on the site.
Yeah.
And so, in fact, I would rather see the magazine being a platform for everybody to share their ideas and opinions professionally than kind of being a filter of what goes against and what goes with best practices.
Mm.
I think it's also not our place, to be honest.
Mm.
So I don't see like us being a shield of things to do and not to do. They're more like a discourse where you can share what worked for you, right? And what didn't work for you doesn't mean that it's going to work or not work for other people.
I think is a really good point. I think because if I look back to the times where I've caused a shitstorm because I've expressed an opinion. It's not because I expressed an opinion. It's because I expressed it in a absolute way.
Yes.
You know, true. That's right. The reality. This is how things are. And that's going to get you in trouble because other people are going to come back and say, no, it's not how things are, or certainly not in my situation. So instead, what you've got to do is come back. You've got to write those kinds of opinion posts with, in my experience, this is how things are.
Exactly. That's a very different view, yeah. Right? So if you kind of make it a bit more relative and say, you know, this worked for me, it might be very different for you, yeah. Right? But I'm just expressing what I really believe in and what has worked for me. So that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
And as long as you not say this is how things are or should be, yeah, that's a different story. Although you might be able to say that too if you strongly believe in something, but you better give some proof that yeah. this is indeed better.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, of course, the other big The reality is with Smashing Magazine that you actually are yourself a huge blogger. You write a lot for Smashing Magazine and you're always putting out content. So I'm quite interested in how you come up with post ideas all the time, because that's the hardest thing. You know, that's the thing. If you talk to people about blogging, the one thing they always come back with is, I can't come up with ideas. Or they have like, they keep it going for 3 months. You've been keeping it going for 11 years. You know, how do you keep it going?
Yeah, well, to be honest, there's always something to solve. There's always a problem to solve. So I'm trying to keep my eye on all kind of problems I encounter. It could be just, it basically requires you to be curious, I think. So it could be I'm in a subway and I look at the metro map and I find it's weird. Something is wrong there. So I think about, oh, that would be interesting. Maybe somebody could write an article about how to design metro maps. Mm. And we actually had a few articles about that too. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, I have a problem with the Flexbox here in that scenario. Right? Maybe it would be interesting to look into how to explore it, how to solve it for good. Mm. Not just, you know, the dirty hack that works in this particular case, but what is the reason why it doesn't work? Mm. So I'm always trying to be inquisitive, and we always have like a list of potential authors that I could contact to write about something. You know, I have a problem with Flexbox, I'll go to, I don't know, to Sarasuidan, for example. I have a problem with the grid layout, I probably will go to Rachel Andrew, mm-hmm. this kind of stuff. But also things like, you know, problems that we have, like subscription, for example, you know, Smashing membership and the new site, it's a new stack, it's everything is different. So I probably will look for people who already have experience mm-hmm. in this kind of projects. So when we had a problem with web font loading, so I thought, oh, okay, so who could I talk to? And so I went to Zach Leatherman, who is just so much into web fonts. And now, as a result, we have a nice solution that he could write about, mm-hmm. right? It's always problem-based. So you start from a problem. There are tons of problems to solve everywhere, yeah. and whenever you look, and then you just find your way out.
I like that. I've never thought of it in terms of problem-based, but that is a really good starting point. For me, I have a constant ongoing list that I'm always adding to. So, you know, you're surrounded by blog posts all the time.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
every time you have a conversation related to your work, there's a blog post in it. You know, there's a blog post in blogging, True. As we're just Absolutely. Discussing now.
Oh, yes.
But also, whatever you're working on currently almost always has
a stuff. Yeah, that's a yeah. great gateway to everything. Like, this is exactly what you can write about.
Yeah.
And, of course, I'm privileged to be having many conversations with many people around the world about CSS, visual design, UX, performance, whatever. So there is always something in the air. Like, oh, that's really interesting. Like, how would you do that?
Do you keep any kind of list, or is it all, I suppose, because of the huge quantity that you have to push out of content, that it kind of goes out the door as soon as you think of it, does it?
Yeah, actually, yeah. this is exactly how I try to do it. So once I have a problem, I write it down. We usually use Dropbox paper just as a to-do list for everything, and mm-hmm. I put it on the list to send it out today.
Right.
And then I just do it, and then it's gone, and then I keep track, of course, if the person has replied or not.
I mean, I find that...
That's pretty much it.
Because the last thing you want to do is sit down and go, okay, today I've got to write a blog post without kind of backlog of ideas of what you're gonna write.
That's probably not going to work.
No.
And I think at this point, it's really about finding those little things. So I would always or often go to Gallery of Responsive Japanese websites and Chinese websites and Arabic websites. Because there are many interesting things that are very different from what we are used to.
Yeah.
So the patterns are different, the colors are different, typography is different, everything is different. Mm-hmm. So, and I look there and I think, wow, that's a different way of doing this. Like an example for that would be a carousel. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know everybody hates carousels, but if you need to design one, how would you design one? You would probably go on Google and try to find, I don't know, some of us might be going like carousel jQuery plugin, this kind of thing, right? And I spent probably like an entire day finding and trying to explore carousels in Turkey when I was in Istanbul. Like my thing every time I'm in a new city, I pick a topic and I just go. And so they don't use, like, for example, when we use carousel, we have an like, arrow left, arrow right, and then those dots in between. They never use dots. You will never find dots in Turkey. They always have numbers. Like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, sometimes going all the way up to 20. They're just ridiculous, right? So I'm always trying to find those patterns, right? And then I think, what would make an interesting article? Well, wouldn't it be interesting to write an article about how to design a carousel, a perfect carousel, even although most of us hate it? And, you know, based on this research, I then just try to think and read and do research and, you know, then these articles kind of appear. They take a lot of time, but they appear, and I think that they have a very good resonance as well.
That's a really good question then, a follow-up question to that is, I'm always torn between the quality and the quantity aspect. And I think we might potentially disagree a little bit over this. So if you had to pick quality or quantity, which would you go for?
Well, of course, I'll go with quality.
Yeah. And that's interesting because I think I would lean towards quantity, which seems contradictory. But let me explain my logic.
I know why, but you go first.
I talk to a lot of people that struggle to get blogging. And one of the biggest barriers I see them struggle with is this thing in their head that it has to be really good, right? But the trouble is that you don't get really good unless you do it again and again and again and again and again. So I can understand how quality applies more in your situation where you can kind of slow it down and you can spend more time on it. But if you're at your beginning days of blogging, I think quantity is the way you learn. And the other reason that I lean towards that is that when you focus just on quality, then you put out posts more sporadically, which means that you don't build up the same readership. So perhaps the reason that you can concentrate on quality, I mean, you could, Smashing could put out one post a month, but it chooses not to. It chooses to do it every day. So are you really just focusing on quality?
So first of all, I respectfully disagree with you.
Okay.
I think that you can also learn by writing and writing and writing the same article. Ooh. But the thing is, you don't have to keep, just waiting for that perfect moment to publish that big monster online. So you can do it in parts. Can do it like you can write an article and then publish the first part and then the second part and then the third part. So and even if it's like, you know, short, it's not a big problem. I mean, if it's just 5 minutes read, 8 minutes read, I think that's perfectly fine. I think that if you want to stand out behind, like, for something, or if you want people to notice you, unless you have tons of brilliant ideas that can be expressed in a very short way, right? You really need to do some research to find, okay, this is the point, because you have to have some sort of solid ground on which you operate. Or if not, you could have like tons of interesting ideas that people find interesting as well. Mm. Like, for example, littlebigdetails.com.
Yeah.
Right? It's a fantastic little site. I visit every day if I can. And so every post is like two sentences. So it's like a Tumblr, right? Mm. Two sentences. So here's an interesting thing I found. UX-wise or UI-wise, go and check it out. That's it. Hmm. That's okay. So you don't have to go like and spend, I don't know, 5,000 hours or so, well, probably not that much, trying to find, wow, these are all the examples of this pattern in use everywhere on the web.
Yeah. Right?
So we kind of try to do both. So we have quite short articles. We have quite lengthy articles. I think that the lengthy ones become some sort of cornerstone.
Yes.
If people notice them, they will keep coming back to them. Mm-hmm. That's very important. It's like reference articles. Mm. If they don't find it, you have to bring attention to that article, maybe, every now and again, because if you think that this is a good one. But at the same time, short articles can produce And that can be great, all right? So they can produce interesting discussions. They can be linked somewhere. They could be goodies, freebies, anything. Mm. So I'm totally, I think it's just about having a mix of both.
Yeah.
I guess. And again, short articles, don't even if you publish like every day, they're not bad at all. They don't have to be. Mm. If there is something that's worth sharing, let's go for it. You don't have to wait until you finish that big monster. But reference articles are important as well.
Yeah. You seem to be leaning more these days towards those big reference cornerstone pieces. Is that a fair comment? You seem to be doing quite a lot of those recently.
Yeah. So if I'm writing, I tend to do that. Yes.
Yeah.
But also partly because I'm kind of writing a book about those things. So I wanted to be kind of included, not included, but I have to do my research for the book to be published.
Yeah. So you're reusing.
I have quite high standards. Yeah. From, yes. Yes, exactly.
And I mean, that's actually a really good tip, isn't it? If you're blogging, is that reusing of content, you know, said about breaking stuff down into multiple posts or turning some of it into social media,
etc. I think we often are a bit afraid of showing something public and then charge for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see that value. And I can see that problem. But let's say if you have, let's say, a book and you it's spread over, I don't know, 30, 40 HTML pages, right? I don't know if it's really such a deal breaker for people not to buy it.
I don't think
if they can access it online.
And people like being able to take stuff offline. They like it in print format. They like it. Yep. An ebook brings a whole. I mean, one of the things I'm a huge fan is taking a whole series of blog posts and turning them into a coherent single argument as an ebook. I think that works really well.
It's like a tangible thing. I think. I don't think we should worry too much about, that's available online, nobody's going to buy.
Yeah.
The same way like conference videos, mm-hmm. right? So you could lock them down and make the people pay.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that, I'm not sure that having conference videos available online actually necessarily makes you stay away from the conference.
Mm. No,
I can see that
experience.
Partly.
Yeah,
it's a different experience. I can see that some managers might say, "Well, you can watch all the talks online anyway for learning." So this is why, for example, workshops like hands-on workshops attached to a conference, I think, are critical.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't run any research on this kind of if it actually keeps people away.
So one other question I wanted to ask you about blogging, if I may, is I'm interested in your process for blogging. Because I have a very particular series of steps that I go through. But everybody I speak to seems to approach blogging in a completely different way. And so I'm just interested. I've never asked you this. How do you go about writing a blog post?
Oh, that's a good question. Now, first of all, we need to distinguish between me and, editors. Because
no,
we
I
also
mean
have
you.
Great...
When you write something.
Okay. So when I write, I just open up a text editor. First, I go offline.
Yeah.
I turn off everything and just turn on my headphones, very much like the ones you have right now, actually.
Yeah.
And turn on and music and just do a lot of research or if I'm online. And if I'm offline, then it's my writing time.
Mm-hmm.
I just write all this stuff down. But first, I always need to kind of write down some of the key things I want to mention, I want to cover, just on a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
So I always have my moments where like for an hour or so, I'm just going to write down the structure of what I have in my head, what I want to cover, this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I open IA Writer and I just go. And I prefer to be offline, even if it means I can't look things up.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have things like placeholders in my article because I don't know what the right word would be.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's a bit better than going online and getting distracted by all the emails and everything else. One thing I also used to do is actually not necessarily going offline, but removing everything that has notifications.
Right, yeah.
Right. So I would then use my browser, like a special browser, which is Canary, Chrome Canary at this point.
Yeah.
Just for research. So I use it only for research. There are no extensions there. It's blank, it's fast, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
But then everything else, like including Dropbox and mail, is just disabled. And so I go and I basically, like, it's like ironing for me. I write and then I go over and I refine. And then I keep writing, and then I go over again, and I refine. And it's like from top to bottom, top to bottom, top to bottom, thousands of times until I feel like that's solid.
Okay.
And then just the last step before kind of sending the article to a proofreader is to send it to people like you, right, for like second review, second opinion, to get some feedback.
Okay.
And sometimes, of course, if an article is very technical, I will do it even earlier.
Right. that's really interesting. So my process isn't dissimilar. So I start with some research. I then create a structure. That's the same as you. Then I take the approach of Ernest Hemingway's write drunk, edit sober. So what I interpret that, I don't literally... Well, I have been known to write drunk, but...
We do not encourage people drinking in this podcast.
No, we don't. But that principle of just writing and not analyzing what you're doing, but just get it out of your head and just keep going till it's done.
Yeah.
Then I tend to, the first thing is I tend to, my editing process is more basic, I think, than yours. Because my editing process will be, first of all, I dump it through something like Grammarly just to kind of clear up the big, obvious editing stuff. Then I get it read back. I get my computer to read it back because my computer is merciless. It reads what's there rather than what I should have written. That makes sense.
Right.
So that helps pick up things. Then I tend to read back through it again when I then start adding links in and imagery and captions and headings and that kind of stuff. So I probably don't go over it as many times. You rewrite a lot more, I think, than I would do.
Well, yeah. So I always need to have this moment. So I kind of need to I don't know how to describe it, but it's like I have to be to feel the potential of getting into the zone.
Right.
That's kind of
the best way. Yeah. No, I know that. Yeah.
Describing. Sometimes you have you just had a long day the day before. It just feels so slow and everything. You're not going to get some really interesting writing done. But sometimes I feel like, I'm really curious how to solve it now. And now I just start writing. And sometimes it's the way I write is very similar to how I speak.
Yeah.
So, and then I, of course, once I have to edit, I realize that some things have to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I even go as far as dictating.
Yeah, I do.
I do that sometimes just to get my ideas out of the head. And there are actually very cheap services that allow you to move from audio to text.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, it's just raw, rough and, it's not particularly helpful. But it's helpful in the way of kicking off an article. Mm-hmm. It helps me a lot, for example, when I just don't know how to start.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, how would I actually say it? So I'm just talking, and at some point I hit this point where I feel like, that could be a good starting for that article.
Yeah.
And then I just start writing.
And also sometimes I don't always start at the beginning either. I find the beginning the hardest bit to do, the kind of intro. So sometimes I'll jump through, because you've got an outline, you've created an outline structure of bullet points. I'll sometimes just jump into the middle and write that bit first. And then I often write the beginning at the end, if that makes sense, because I've kind of everything else has come together by that point. So that's another thing. But I also dictate, but I actually use proper dictation software because I don't know, taking my fingers out of the equation seems to help me in some way. So I use Dragon for the Mac to dictate a lot of the time, which is another good thing.
That's interesting.
Do you do it in a single sitting or do you split it?
No. It's all over the place.
Yeah.
So I keep traveling a lot. Not the last month or so, but the last month, but not the month before.
Right.
So it's usually split. But then the thing is, I know that I'm most productive if I start early in the morning. And early could be as early as like 7 and go all the way the entire day.
Right.
No interruptions.
Obviously
for lunch and stuff like that.
See, but that's very different.
Okay, so for me, it's like I'm sitting in, I'm in this moment. I mean, everything is still offline.
Right.
So I'm just doing my thing and eventually I'm done. And I have finished a major chunk of the work, right? And sometimes if I have that chunk ready, and then I don't do anything for 3 or 4 days because I have some other things to take care of, then it takes me quite some time to get back in, right? And then when I got there, which maybe takes like half an hour or so to get back in, I always try to push myself to get done as much as possible.
Wow.
And then again, the same story. So I don't like to work on multiple posts at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I have my thing in front of me and I just want to have it just ready and get it out of the door.
Wow, we're really different over that because I always have probably half a dozen posts going. And the reason that I do that is it goes back to what you were saying about getting in the zone. And I've got I know that I'm very driven by my mood, my feelings. So I have to be in a particular frame of mind to write that initial draft, and I'm not always there. So if I'm in the mood to write, right, even if, because what happens is, my attention span, this is, I will start writing a post and I'll get the rough draft of it there, and then I'll get bored with that subject and another subject will come along that I'm excited about.
Oh, that sounds just like me, actually.
Yeah, so I have to kind of get that bit down, at least partially. But then another day, I won't be feeling very inspired, but I can easily sit down and take a post and run it through Grammarly, because that's almost an autonomic kind of, you know, step-by-step thing. So that's why I end up with a lot going, because sometimes it's just an idea and it's an outline and nothing else. Other times I want to kind of blurge and get a bit out, and then other times I'm in the mood to edit. And so,
That's interesting. So for me, it's like sometimes I will be distracted as well, like just because for, you know, some, not necessarily like digital stuff, but offline stuff, and have maybe a birthday party to attend, this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then it really kind of throws me off, to be honest.
Yeah.
I still feel like when I sit down, I need like the worst thing that can happen to me is somebody interrupting me.
Yeah.
So this is why my phone is off and everything. So that's really, really, you know, ruins everything, because then I need again like 15-20 minutes to get back, if at all. Sometimes I just don't do it anymore. I just can't. So I need this interrupted time, as much of it as I can. Mm. So this is why, for example, I write fairly well. And actually the same goes for coding. I code fairly well in planes.
Yeah.
Or just in interrupted spaces. Like, even if it's there is a chaos around me, like a coffee shop, right? If there is nobody coming to me and who wants to talk to me, I have my headphones on, and they don't have to be noise canceling.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I'm in my thing, and I'm doing that thing. And I dedicated to do that thing until, I don't know, 6. Mm-hmm. And there is one little thing that's been very helpful for me, by the way, is to have some sort of schedule, I guess. So I would go to the gym at a very specific time, no more, no later, never.
Right.
Always would be 8 p.m. That means that I have to finish that article, I have to finish that outline or whatever I'm working until 7:30 to go home and to change and things like that. So that pushes me a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I know it's not a big deal if I don't make it, but I will never work, you know, beyond 8.
Yeah.
That's one thing. And the other thing is I would always be in a little bit of, I'd be motivated enough to finish it,
actually,
and to get my head in the right place, right? That's been like having this kind of structure, a little bit of structure, helps me enormously.
Yeah, I think my writing process gives me the structure, because I'm not going back over something again and again with no finite end. You know, I will do, you know, as I said, the run through Grammarly, get the computer to read it back, the add images. You know, I've got this set number of stages, and once I've been through the stages, it is done, and I'm moving on to next thing.
Right. Mm.
It's really interesting. It's how different people.
So we do work differently. Yeah. We operate in different space.
And I think that should be quite encouraging to anyone listening to this, that there is no right or wrong way to blog, either in terms of how you write, the length of posts, the subject matter of posts, you know, whether they're opinion or tutorials. There is so much possibility in terms of doing this, and
absolutely,
that's a good takeaway, if nothing else.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be discouraged by people saying, well, everybody has written about this on Medium like 1,000 times, right? Well, the thing is, again, if you write about your own experience, this is your own story, and you deserve to tell this story. Mm. And people, you know, deserve to hear the story as well, even although something similar might have been published already. So this is why I love looking into case studies of what people did, and not necessarily like professional case studies, but even anything like
stories about.
So these are, I know it sounds cliche, but things you need to know about being a father. Mm-hmm. That's what I learned over the last 15 years of my life or so. Mm-hmm. I love reading these articles, and even if I read them 1,000 times, I still learn something new. Mm.
And also, even if someone has written something before, they're not going to say it from your perspective, as you were saying, and they might not have read the other articles that are out there. You know, it's you never know. And also, the other thing about personal opinion and writing articles about your own experiences is it's very hard for people to criticize that. You know, one of the things that people...
Because
there are a lot of people out there that are afraid of criticism. But if all you're doing is talking about what happened to you, then, you know, you can't really criticize that, can you?
Yeah, because it actually happened to you.
Yeah.
And these are the things that I learned from it. So, yes, absolutely.
Cool.
So go ahead and share. I would love to read your article, dear friends.
Yes, absolutely. I think blogging is there's less and less of that around today. And I think it's hugely... Well, no, that's not true. There's a lot of people that are blogging. But there are a lot of people that are doing it maybe for the wrong reasons, that aren't doing it out of a passion to share ideas, you know.
Right. And I also think that if we look back now over the last decade or so, going back to what we talked about at the beginning, I think at the time, like 5, 10 years ago, actually I would say 10 years ago, blogging was kind of shiny and new thing. Everybody was kind of getting their hands on it. And now it feels like... it's companies and agencies that are blogging, right? It's more a bit more corporate at times, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but it kind of changed a little bit, and the perception of blogging has changed as well.
Yeah.
For example, you will hardly see anybody writing their own blog post about like one needle scissors technique they discovered, or maybe on Medium, but most of the time it's just not happening. People maybe would tweet something, or they would maybe share it with their friends. But I think we may be all too busy to just blog regularly, or we maybe are mature.
And the thing is that I think blogging can be very valuable from a corporate perspective. And that's why a lot of corporations blog. But the people that are blogging in those corporations are almost always marketing people. And something changes in people's mentality, even to say if you're blogging for your web design agency. If you're doing it at a corporate level, you turn into corporate bot 2000 and everything becomes very marketing and very, you know, dry and not human. And I think I would like to see people, sure, blogging for the marketing benefits, blogging for the content marketing elements of it, but doing it in a more human, real way. You know, introducing the humanity back to the blogging and that personal voice. And not everything needs to be so polished, and not everything needs a carefully crafted clickbait headline, etc. You know, a bit of realism.
So in the same way, like I see, for example, Airbnb blogging about like Airbnb engineering blogging in the same way Financial Times engineering.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so good. That's really, really good stuff. And you will even find Pornhub blogging as well.
Like, do about they really? I didn't know
Oh, yeah. They have fantastic, really interesting things
about
the usage stats and all kind of stuff. It's really, really interesting. So I think that it's like really valuable to you know, people out there. I mean, obviously, engineering blog would be interesting for engineers and front-end developers, but it also puts the company in a very different spotlight.
Yeah.
So everybody's looking for a front-end developer. Everybody's looking for a designer these days. So if you, you know, have a blog, an engineering blog, first of all, you show that you kind of care about it. You show that you care about people working there. They have a time and space to actually write about what they learn. You see also what they have learned. And so if I was looking for a front-end developer, I would probably use it as a gateway to find people who might be interested in it as well. Because people who will read this article are also the ones who have interest in this topic. Right? So this would be a perfect spot maybe to have like a job ad or so. They were hiring, by the way. So this is why I see a lot of value in this kind of blogging.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, we've run over time, as is always the way when I talk to you.
I could talk to you for hours.
Well, I know.
And
we can do soon.
And
we're gonna meet at Barcelona for Smashing Barcelona.
Right.
So we can have a lot of drinking and talking then.
We do not encourage
drinking on this podcast. All right, thank you very much for your time, Vitaly, and I'll talk to you again.
Thank you so much for having me, Paul. All right, it was fun.
So there you go. That was my interview with Vitaly. Marcus, I won't ask you to make comments on it because you haven't listened to it yet.
Thank you.
But you are going to listen to it, aren't you, when you edit the show?
Well, the one thing you said at the start, I thought, which kind of made me look up, was he has a different approach to you. So it's like, well, that's interesting. Okay. Mm. So I'll be,
yeah.
Because, I know what your process is. You've been through it with me and with Chris, and it's kind of like, yep, and I try to stick to it and I fail. And I wonder if there's, an alternative way of looking at things that could help me out. So,
He has a very different methodology. Obviously, his approach is wrong and mine's right. But, there you go. You can't have everything. All right, let's talk about our second sponsor, which is Gather Content. Perfect tool, in terms of blogging, especially in a company organization, because in often situations in a company, right, that the blog lives with the marketing team, right? So the marketing team is responsible for dealing with the blog, but they then have to get specialists, people that actually understand the topic that's been, that the company is involved with, to write the content for the blog. And getting content out people is always hard and miserable, and so something like Gather Content will really help with that. It also obviously helps if you run an agency and you're working with clients and trying to extract content from them, which makes life miserable. So it's a great place to organize and gather your content. You could do things like create an inventory of all the content that's got to be produced so people know exactly what's got to be done. You can define your sitemap within it. You can even create templates to help contributors know how the content needs to be structured. So you could even put in, for example, into your template things like, who is your target audience? What is the one takeaway that they should get from this blog post? So you can actually lead them and educate them in writing the content. Also, and this is a huge feature, especially if you run an agency, is you can import the content from Gather Content directly into the content management system you're building. And that is just killer. So the user doesn't have to fiddle around with the content. Sorry, the content creator doesn't have to fiddle around with the CMS yet. You can still be building the CMS while collecting the content together, which is so useful. You can define your requirements and all the rules around the content. It is such a good app. Check it out for yourself. 30-day free trial, no credit card required. Go to gathercontent.com/boagworld. Talking of apps, we always try and suggest some apps on each week's show and this season. So in this case, some apps to help you write good, wonderful blog posts. The first thing, piece of advice I want to give when it comes to this kind of thing is seriously consider learning Markdown. Now, Markdown is not an app. Markdown is really a very simplified kind of coding scripting language. So it's like HTML for Marcus.
Yep. Marcus can do Markdown, although I rarely do these days. Most of the, obviously, pretty much all the blogging I do is on a Headscape site, so I just do it straight into WordPress. But I have done it, and it's easy enough that even I can do it.
Yeah. So it's really useful because there's a whole range of text editors that support Markdown. And the great thing is if you write something in Markdown, then you can export it in all kinds of different formats. You can export it as rich text. You could export it as a Word document. You could export it as a PDF. You could export it as HTML. So it's hugely flexible. So really worth doing. If you're going to be blogging a lot, learn Markdown. Really is very simple. We'll put a link in the show notes to a Markdown cheat sheet. Now, the apps that I wanted to recommend both build on that idea of learning Markdown. The first one, because Markdown is just text, right? So you can write it in whatever your text editor of choice is. And when you save it out as a text file. Then you can preview it in something called Marked2, right? Mm-hmm. Now, Marked2 basically gives you a preview of any Markdown, and you can set the style of it so it can visually replicate what your site looks like. Or you could style it so that you then save it out as a PDF and it comes out in a certain way. So it's a really, really powerful tool. It also kind of has a load of extra functionality built into it. You know, for example, it tells you how many words you've written, and it has smart tools for writers that kind of give different, you know, give advice on your writing content and, you know, spelling and all those kinds of stuff. So it's a great little tool, which you should definitely check out. The other one that I wanted to mention is a bit more of a heavy duty tool, but is the tool that I write in all the time, and it's called Ulysses. Now, annoyingly, they've just changed to a subscription model that gets right up my nose, but setting that aside, it's $5 per month or $40 per year to subscribe to it. And it's an incredibly powerful writing app. I've written books in it, I've written articles in it. All of my writing is within this app. It's all searchable, it's all indexed. It's got things like you can set a word count that you want to reach, and you can see it easily counting down as you get nearer that word count. It's all markdown based writing. It's a very clean, distraction-free interface. And again, it's almost got the Marked 2 functionality built into it, so you can preview stuff and output it in different ways. And it's backing up everything you write as you write it, which is so useful, trust me. So a couple of great apps. Oh, and you can even publish directly to WordPress and Medium in it. I mean, it's got loads of other stuff that you, they've got a big feature table on their website that you can check out. So that's another good writing tool. Just another thing to throw into the mix is one of the things you want to be doing as a blogger is collecting blog ideas, and there are some great tools out there for collecting ideas and making outlines and stuff like that. And you could do it straight in Ulysses, but there are tools obviously like Evernote, which is well known as a tool for doing that kind of thing. An increasingly popular one is called Bear, as in bear-writer.com, which is a lovely, very clean app for doing that kind of work in. But one that I've personally adopted recently is the one that I'm viewing right now, because it has my show notes in, which is called Notion. And it's like a personal wiki. And I think, wasn't that mentioned on last week's show? Yes, yeah, Colin mentioned it. Yeah, so there's that as well. So a whole load of tools for you to check out there. That pretty much wraps up this week's show. Have you got a joke for us, Marcus?
I have. Two fish are in a tank. One says to the other, "It's a bit wet in here." The other says, "Blimey, a talking fish." You weren't expecting that, were they? The two fish in a tank joke has been around for a while.
Yeah, no, that was very good. I liked that one. All right. Good one, Marcus.
So please send me more jokes. Marcus@bowagworld.com, please.
Please. So yeah, we need to push it again on the Slack channel. Have you actually pushed it on there? You ought to do that.
Yeah, it goes in waves. But yes, right. I will go on there and say, "Oi."
Yeah, sort them out. Sort it out. So next week we're looking at SEO with Andy Kinsey. So, and how SEO affects your content marketing strategy. So join us for that one then. But until then, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.